Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into our Company Forensics podcast. In this podcast, we hear the stories of failed and successful companies from the founders themselves. I rarely get the chance to chat with the creators of a product that I'm profoundly passionate about, so I am extra excited to host Devrim Yassar today. Devrim is the CEO of SuperPre, which you might have heard about because they recently closed a $2 million seed round led by ENIAC Ventures. If you've ever been to one of my office hours, SuperPre is the platform that we've been using in the past few months to host office hours with our team. So here's how I would describe SuperPre. And Devrim is going to correct me if I'm wrong. So SuperPre provides influencers or experts with a platform to connect to their audiences. They started with one-on-one sessions, which I would have called office hours, and then more recently with streams and closed channels to, again, engage with their audiences in different ways. But what I love about what they're doing is that they're solving one thing that we were already solving before we came across them, but we had to use a combination of Calendly and Stripe and Webflow and Uber Conference. They somehow found this niche to bring all this stuff into the same platform. And that is my favorite part of their story. But Devrim, tell me if I got some of this stuff wrong.
You're absolutely right. And that's what first inspired me to get this platform up and running, because there are people who have the knowledge and there are people who want that knowledge. And the path between was jump here, jump there, and then come back down here. And then most people were saying that we are having so many back and forth with people that want to talk to us. The scheduling of that 1 hour costs us 2 hours. So that actually was, let's actually get this done. I felt this needed to be done. And then we started just like that.
So to me, the biggest question I have, and I think that the stuff that's going to be much more relevant for our audience of startups, is how did you manage to overcome what we call the chicken egg issue, right? So you need, how do you get your first strong influencer into the platform? How do you build that credibility so that other experts, other influencers can join? And that, I think, is going to be the core of the call. But before that, I want to kind of go back a little bit to hear your story on how you got to SuperPre. So you're originally from Turkey, if I got that right. You went to school in the Netherlands. You're sort of like a digital nomad. This is not your first company at all. So tell us about you and how you got here.
I moved to the States in 2008. I started working as a CTO, and my back then CEO is now my lead investor from New York. So we worked 2 years together, and then I had this idea of making developer tools easier, and that unfortunately has failed. So we spent 7 years on that. I raised $20 million, and then we tried our best, and I think it was a good product. It was a good idea. It was a little ahead of its time. Right now, GitHub is doing it with code spaces. There are a bunch of other people are still at that problem, so they're going to fix it one day, but we started in 2012, and that was quite early. No Docker, not even like good services. We wound it down, shut it down in 2018. And I was in 2019, I was thinking about, what am I going to do next? What's next for me? Having failed isn't really the best psychology for a founder. Am I now a failure, or have I just failed? That was just this, it was existential. And then I've always thought failure is cool and we will move on from it. It's a good learning, etc. So 2019 was a lot of introspection and finding out like what I really want to do. And I read one book called Surrender Experiment, and I loved it so much. It resonated with me. That book suggests that you go with the flow. And one day I had the idea for SuperPre, and we didn't even have the name yet. I called Fatih, my co-founder, and I said, Fatih, from coding, if I were to pick a person to do another startup with, you would be one of them. So here's my two ideas. One is the SuperPre, and the second one was different. And then he liked the SuperPre a lot. He said, this could really work, because he's a YouTuber. He has videos. He, you know, constantly has these inbounds like, hey, can I talk to you? I have a question. Can I talk to you? I have a question. So how do you respond to that? If you have a large following, yeah, like you have 100K, 200K subscribers, some of these people want to have one-on-one time with you. Mm-hmm. And scheduling that, like you said in the beginning of this call, was a huge hassle. And then I saw that as a block behind, almost, I don't want to sound like delusional, but almost like a block front of us as humanity, as civilization. My prompt was, in that 2019, I said, maybe I should learn a little machine learning. So I watched someone on YouTube 10 hours long. And then I'm doing my project and I got stuck and I couldn't call that person. I now need to find someone who knows machine learning. I need to tell them like, hey, here's the 10 hours of course that I just followed. Mm-hmm. And they need to know where I'm stuck and then just unstuck me from there. Versus that person on YouTube is having ad revenues. Why not? I could call him and then pay him $500 because that was how important that question was to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this all stuff came together and SuperPure kind of took off on its own. I went to a holiday party of that investor that I just told you about, and Bevram, whatever it is that you're doing, just take 25K. I didn't even tell him this idea. He was like, you're going to do something great. I know it. And you're going to do something amazing. Please let us in. And I'm like, okay. He's like my almost like family. We worked together. We had all these experiences together. And I said, okay, I'll take an angel check from you. And he goes and tells his partners. And then next week he calls me and then says, Devrim, what about 750? Because it's also very into it. Tom's Hadley's is very into it. And from there, learnings of surrender experiment. If something comes your way, you accept it. Even if that's something that you didn't plan, if something that you didn't think about, you surrender to it. You submit to your flow. And then if the flow takes you someplace, you adapt to that place. So that was my idea anyway. I said, we didn't have the intention of raising, like right now we are at $10 million. Even the second round came to us. I didn't need to build a deck for it. From there, like those are the beginnings of SuperPure. Then chicken and egg problem. I think it's a chicken and egg problem. Is you can look at it from multiple perspectives, and you know that you. I love your channel, Startup Forensics, and then you just see it from all angles. There's a user component who uses your product first, because they become your voice. Who tweets about your product first and second and third? How others perceive you. I think we should play to 5 seconds attention span now, and maybe it's 1 second now. You get on product hunt and people look at your website. In 1 second, they see a face or they see a title, and then they immediately categorize you. And I don't mean this in a negative way. I think that's a very natural human behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I go to slidebean.com and then you say you make beautiful decks. That's it. Like literally the rest of the page just gets erased over time. But if anyone asks me, hey, where do I build beautiful decks? I actually gave a couple of people your email, my founder friends. And I'm like, go get your deck done over here. And SuperPure became one-on-one paid video calls in the beginning. But the chicken and egg problem, I think, I look at it from the user's perspective. I look at it from the tagline, how beautifully you make your landing page. Literally, landing pages took the longest time in our case because I really want to capture that little bit of an attention span. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of rules that I share with our design team that do not use copy. We are connecting people or democratizing knowledge or revolutionizing X, or because people tend to use those words. And maybe if we hit the scale, we will be able to do that. And people take marketing lessons from Twitter or Apple or Microsoft, people who are already big. Mm-hmm. People who are already big, in my mind, is like famous people already. Like if Elon Musk comes and tells you, Kaya, you're doing great, you feel inspired. They didn't say anything specific, but you already know those people, so you already respect those people. Mm-hmm. But if a random stranger comes and tells you that, you're like, what? Who are you? I think when startups are their first time, they are the random strangers. Don't be too bold. Don't be too visionary. Just tell them what you do. We do one-on-one paid video calls, and now we added live streams and channels. You can have subscription revenue through your live streams. With this one sentence, if we don't nail this, I think you don't solve chicken and egg problem, because people come to your website and then it says connecting knowledge. Are you Nokia? Are you Facebook? Are you TED? Are you this? Are you that? So I would recommend everybody who watches this show to really make sure that your one sentence is you and cannot be applied to multiple verticals or other products. So I say this, that if you take this and then applied it to how many companies? If it's more than 10, then you didn't do it good. If it applies to more than, to only our competitors, that's great, because that's us. So even if you could specify that it only applies to you, that's great. So attention span is one factor. Second, who you start with is the chicken and egg problem. So we started with Chris Messina, which was like we ended up building a product for him. Chris Messina is an old friend of mine.
Okay.
But he reached out to me because I changed my Twitter bio. So it turns out that he's using a program that monitors if someone changes Twitter bio. That means mm-hmm. that they are working on a new project, and then he just mm-hmm. sends them a note. Mm-hmm. So I changed my bio, and around the time, I'm like, it would be nice to actually launch this on Product Hunt. And he reaches out to me. He says, Devra, you're working on SuperPure. It looks very cool. I created my account. Do you want me to hunt you on Product Hunt? And I'm like, dude, that's very cool. Yeah, I was like literally thinking about him. So there was a little bit of a synchronicity there. And he also became our top earner. He launched on his blog post. He's closing to six figures on SuperPure. Yeah, everybody on Twitter kind of loved the product because of the reasons that you outlined, because a lot of people want to have those one-on-ones, but it's so hard to manage them. There are a couple of things, psychological things, that was being done wrong in other platforms. I think I solved them in a very mindful way, like from the heart, so to speak. One of them was, I said to myself, this one-on-one call, it should be as meaningful as to the other. So if I want to reach out to you and I want to pay you for your time, you shouldn't go out of that call saying that, oh, here's 30 minutes that I'm not going to get back. Mm-hmm. Versus how do we make sure that people who call have a question, have that actual thing? Like, you don't want to knock on Michael Jordan's door and say, hey, could you talk to me about basketball? That's not the interaction Michael Jordan is looking for. But would I not pay Michael Jordan $25,000 to just talk to him about a brand that I want to launch? That would be an interesting conversation for Michael Jordan. Like, he might actually have the conversation even without the money. But if I am willing to pay that amount, that means that I value this conversation as much. That's why we never recommend free calls, because free calls don't create that level of satisfaction.
Of course.
And the fourth thing is, I think, luck. That mm-hmm. is maybe the 90% of this. I'm not going to like oversee that, because luck isn't really, you win the lottery and then you finally sitting on top of a startup and you called us successful and thank you very much. Going there, I don't see us as successful until we are like the smooth sailing. However, I think is an important factor. Like, no one predicted COVID. No one predicted that people will be moving to video like at this speed. Mm-hmm. All those things matter. And I think, if you feel what you are doing in your heart, if every day of this, what you are doing is coming from there, I think that luck factor increases and then it just becomes your friend. Because people feel it. People are attracted to your energy. People are attracted to your passion and excitement. They could also tell that this is just a job for you that you're using to get rich.
Okay, so from the story of the SuperPure origins and sort of how you came to where you are now, I see that the vertical here has seems to be network, right? So it was your first CEO that invested in your company. It was your friend that went out and found other investors and got you your first funding. It was your friend, Chris, that became the first SuperPure and started spreading that around to Product Hunt. Yes, maybe there's some luck here. But the vertical that I see is sort of positioning yourself in a network where people appreciate you. People appreciate you for what you do, the work that you do. And I think that's one part that many founders underestimate, how valuable it is to build that network. Tell us about how you built that network. You're a foreign founder. You came, just like me, as a foreigner into the U.S. How do you go from just landing in New York to building this network that eventually became so valuable?
I think building network actually demands us to actually talk about building a network, because most people that I see, even they want to build a network with me, they send a cold inbound email or text or Twitter, and they don't really value that individual connection. To me, network, if you want to build network, it's not about who, it's about how they know. If someone says, go talk to Devram, and if that means something. If that person doesn't do those recommendations all often, I think the one word that I would recommend to everybody, and I use this for myself, is integrity. Always show up when you need to and be there for other people and just make sure that your words carry some weight. My previous startup failed after $20 million and it wasn't a good experience for me, especially in the last 2-3 years. There were like numerous acquisition offers were coming in and that wasn't happening the next time. And I had to manage a board and I had a board member, etc. There was like so much stuff, but nothing made me burn any bridges with anybody that I was working with. So I care about that a lot. So like sometimes people come work for the companies that I founded or other companies that they work for. And then when they go out, they start bad-mouthing the company, bad-mouthing the founder. That doesn't work for your network. Like it's okay. It's life. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes things don't happen. To build the network that worked for me the way that it did, it was because of my integrity. I think that is, I'm allowed to say it. Like I've never wronged anybody in the past. Yes, I have fired people. I have let people go, or I have had those moments of a failed startup, like with the board, and you managed that board, but I still have great relationships with them because they understand that I did my best. And there was nothing wrong with the books, nothing wrong with my ethics. That's what mattered. And now the next time that I want to do something, what I've heard from others, that they were talking like whatever Devin does, whatever he's going to do. And that was, it warmed my heart. Like I was like, wow, I built this. If that's how I am known among those circles, I was really proud of myself that I have had that.
That's amazing. And I think, yes, we need to adopt that. And I think that there's an intangible part of just doing what's fair that people will appreciate, right? Even if it's as complicated as having to fire somebody. But I want to kind of paint me a picture of your first week in New York. You're a developer. Paint me a picture of assuming that you came into New York City as the first time living there, zero network. Where do you start? Where do you start building this? What did you do?
What I have in the fridge if I am hungry, so to speak. Like this is to say, I don't cook a food in my head first. Oh, I really wish I could have that. Versus I'm like, what I have in the fridge and what food I can make with it. So when I came to New York, I actually thought exactly that. Okay, I have zero network here. I need to build it from scratch. The first job I had was through Craigslist. There was a project that I really liked, scalebee.com. I don't think it exists. But Rob wanted to build a website, a web application that puts numbers into perspective. So he said, when we say 800,000 acres of land, a forest is burned in California, we don't know how much land that is. Is it 4 times Texas? Is it 5 times San Francisco? When we say it's 1 kilometer, is it like 4 Empire States or 2 Eiffel Towers? He wanted to create this JavaScript widget that underlines of those things. When you're reading a blog post, when you see a big number, you will hover over it and then it will show you what it is. Like you could then put it in perspective. I love that. And then I was paid like what, $500 a week just helping that project. I just loved it. And then my brother and I were working on coding on the side. And one day I knew in my head, if I ever wanted to get investments in the United States, I needed to prove myself. I needed to build a reputation where an investor would just read my name and then it's okay, this dude checks out. He's not just a foreigner, just came into this country. He has a network. So it always helps. So then one day I remember my brother sent me another Craigslist post that he said, they are looking for you. And that was Local Response. And I read the job description. I'm like, yeah, that clearly is me. And I went and went and met Nihal. And I became his CTO for the next 2 years. And I asked him permission, like, I want to work on coding on the side. Is that okay? And he said, that's totally fine, as long as everything is delivered and the team is managed properly. Mm-hmm. And even there, my integrity was like very important to me. I said, Nihal, I'm a founder. I'm going to be a founder at some point. So this CTO thing, this is something that comes to me naturally. So I will, do it for you. And then he still remembers those days as the best days of our times. So that company also didn't pan out as expected, as intended. So it got acquired and stopped, but it was that the original vision and mission was a lot different. Even through that failure and my next failure, so then network doesn't really care if you failed. Network cares how you carried yourself over those failures and those successes. When you're successful, if you forget people, if you don't, you know, respond to their emails, that's one thing. I think network building it's an art, but I see sometimes it makes me sad to see that people think it's a quantity game. How many connections, how many people you exchange business cards with. It's actually, how useful were you to Kaya is your role model? If you want to be like him a little bit, like, if could you pick a little thing that he really needs and then deliver that to him and then build a relationship, even if you're a contractor, outsider, developer? I think that's what I did. My mentality is, if Steve Jobs asked me to just go and park his car, I would have. I wouldn't say, how much does that pay? No, I really like you. I could, if I could download 0.1% of Steve Jobs into my system, I would consider myself lucky. And obviously, he wouldn't let me park his car or anything, just so to speak. But any job that I would get from him would be highly respected. Or if Freddie Mercury asked me to tour with him, that would be equally amazing.
That's funny. That's funny. How remarkable. One thing that I've experienced, and maybe it connects a little bit to that, as I've gotten older, I'm 32 now, it's gotten harder, you have to put a lot more effort into building these relationships, right? Because when you're in college, you're inevitably stuck with these people. You inevitably find people that you connect with. You inevitably find yourself in situations where you can grab a beer or you can get introduced to somebody by a friend. But that's disappeared. That disappears a lot as you get older, as you have a family and you don't go out as much. It certainly disappeared now with COVID, and hopefully you're working on solving that a little bit. But how do you put yourself in those situations? How do you put yourself in situations where you get to meet new people, where you get to interact, where you get to get asked to park someone's car?
Maybe it's an amazing example, you know, what we are having right now. I built something, you liked it, and thus we met. And maybe we are in the same network now. Maybe we will do things together. Maybe these things will then spark. And I think the best thing to do after that, outside of going to Burning Man and spending that time and increasing your network,
that's right.
I think the second best thing that you could do is to build something that's of value. So people will be attracted to it. People will be around you, because I think after 30s, it's all about building now. It's not casual social interactions, but it's probably Elon Musk would recognize someone who's doing something really nice around rockets, right? Like, he would find them on the internet, he would just click his link and send a personal email to that person to connect. And maybe it will turn into a friendship, maybe it will turn into a professional relationship. But I think that building something that's, I think, manifesting what's inside of you outwards, if that's it's teaching, if it's software building, if it's founding a company. I think there's an enigma about, oh, I want to be a founder. I think it's not required. There are, I think being a founder is like a worker bee. Like, you just work a lot and you just build stuff. I love that. And that speaks to me. I would build a huge treehouse, a Burning Man camp, a company. It just gives me just tremendous amount of joy. But it is equally viable that I would have loved painting. I would have loved making music. I would have loved, if that gave me that much joy, I would never ask myself, should I be a founder? Because that's what I like. And that's very true to my heart. So that big thing that I dream of building, if it's used by millions of people or however many people use that, it gives me that much joy. And I'm like, yes, a lot of people are doing live streams, a lot of people are doing calls. And I think those things are important. I think that's a beautiful way of making connections, versus if you don't have anything to show, it's really hard for me to gauge in what level I can interact with you anymore after 30s. So maybe that would be my one thing. Let's build beautiful things, and people who build similar things will be attracted to each other.
you went from being the CTO, you come from a technical background, you went from being the CTO to becoming the CEO. So how do you see that? How do you see that evolution in your tasks, and how is it different being the CEO? And what sacrifices did you have to make from potentially what you were passionate about, which was coding?
CTO to CEO transition was very smooth to me because I, at heart, I had companies before, and it wasn't a startup as we know it in Silicon Valley, but it was similar. I had one in Turkey and one in Ukraine. So when I came to the States, I was 28. And to me, founding something always, or doing something from scratch, came very naturally. And when I was a little child, everybody has those stories. Like there was a school trip that my dad didn't give me enough allowance to join. And I figured out like where the bus stop is, where the buses are. And I went to the chauffeur and I said, hey, if we take your bus in the morning and use it till the night, how much will it cost? And then he told me a number and I divided it to 40 and I started, oh my God, I could actually take this bus instead of what they were charging, $20. And I'm like, I can charge them 15 and make $5 per person. That was the point where I realized that there are things that you can do. And I made so much money. To my mind, that $200 that I made back when I was, I think, 12, was $5 billion worth. It was so much money. I didn't know what to do with it. I knew that if I brought it home, my dad would be like suspicious. So I actually went there and then I just dug a little hole in the garden and I kept my money there. Maybe having that ability to just maniacally focus on the problem or the thing that you want to have and actually go and be able to move people and things towards that end is something that comes to you. Because how would I have learned it when I was like 7, 8, 9, 10, right? This isn't something that I read. This is and maybe that is a chromosome or a gene that is just, or maybe a brain part that is connected to some other thing. You know, how we are talking about fluid genders, we are talking about fluid things, and we are talking about fluid everything. And I think maybe that's another non-binary thing. Maybe here you become an amazing engineer like Steve Wozniak, and then here maybe you become Steve Jobs. Because I don't think that Steve Jobs could have become Steve Wozniak, even if he studied all the books and all the engineering. He would not be able to go there, and vice versa. So there is some component of this that I believe that is in effect.
Good. Since we're running out of time, one question more, getting back to Superpeer, and you know, where do you see Superpeer going? What's your dream connection? Who are the two people that you would connect on Superpeer and you'd consider your work done?
I would love Elon Musk to be honest. I love the idea of us being able to reach out to those people who we could benefit the most from. I think, you know, Elon Musk's dad story, that he has a sad story. Like when I was growing up, unfortunately, my dad wasn't the best support to things that I was doing. So he always would, he wasn't a bad dad or anything. I don't want to just shame him on a public YouTube channel, but he didn't believe it. If I wanted to do something, his first response would be, yeah, maybe not. And that didn't really sit with me. And I wish sometimes that I could just have this other person that I could call, I could talk to, I could, you know, join the live stream. And that's my dream. If Superpeer becomes that place where we seek knowledge and we find it from the best people, because the knowledge itself isn't important. It's you who should tell me that I'm doing great, because I like that person. I want Elon Musk to tell me what I'm doing is good. I don't want anybody else, because that is this little dot that we are connecting. On Superpeer, you talk to people you already follow, you already have affinity. And if they tell you are on the right path by them looking at your deck, by looking at your startup or your career trajectory, that's my dream. It puts a smile on my face. I think we are building a new type of TED.com where we find these people and connect with them.
Thanks a lot for listening to our podcast, guys. I think Devrim's story is fantastic. I think Superpeer is a fantastic platform. And like I've said many times, we've been using it a lot in the past few months, and we're pretty happy with the experience. Hope that was useful to you guys. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel for many, many more of these stories. And we'll see you next week.